Sometimes going to the grocery store can be chaotic. There doesn't seem to be enough time to check the list, make sure everything is there, search for the best prices, and take the time to make sure you get the best quality meat. So let ButcherBox help you out. Giving you peace of mind, ButcherBox delivers high-quality meat and seafood that you can trust straight to your door. No grocery carts required. Humanely raised, no antibiotics or hormones, 100% grass-fed, free-range, and crate-free. What more can you ask for? What about free shipping, customized box plans, exclusive member deals, recipe inspirations, tips, and tricks? You really can't go wrong with ButcherBox. Sign up at butcherbox.com/morningcup and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional $20 off. Choose salmon, chicken breasts, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/morningcup and use code morningcup to choose your free for a year offer plus get $20 off your first order. Today's podcast is brought to you by Newspapers.com, the ultimate destination for exploring the mysteries of the past. If you're fascinated by true crime, get ready to dive into the stories that made headlines. Newspapers.com offers a billion pages of historical newspapers from the U.S. and beyond, and you can search the entire collection in seconds. Their vast newspaper collection is a goldmine for eyewitness accounts, crime scene photos, news reports, and more. Whether you're interested in famous crimes or long-forgotten cases, Newspapers.com gives you a front-row seat to more than 300 years of history. For our listeners, Newspapers.com has a special offer. Use the code CUPOFMURDER for an exclusive 20% discount on your subscription. That's promo code CUPOFMURDER at Newspapers.com. Sign up today and start unraveling the true crime mysteries that keep you up at night.
There were two more murders 15 miles away.
When police arrived, they found the telephones and electricity lines.
We have a weird homicide.
A scene described by one investigator as reminiscent of a weird...
Morning.
Cup of murder.
Firearms and medication seem like a deadly mix. On September 14th, 1989, a shooting took place that still reigns in Kentucky history books as the deadliest mass shooting. A shooting that, in the aftermath, saw blame placed on a drug and the company who created it. So if you like your coffee hot but your bones chilled, sit back and start your day with a morning cup of murder. Joseph Thomas Westbecker was born on April 27, 1942, to a mother who, after her husband died in a construction accident, had to raise her only child alone starting from the time he was 13 months old. Just 16 years old at the time, she relied on her family for help, and Joseph was shuttled from place to place, even once spending about a year in an orphanage before his family came to collect him. And as if life for the young boy wasn't hard enough, when he was just 4 years old, his grandfather, one of the only people with whom he felt a deep connection, suddenly passed away. Now a teenager, Joseph's poor performance at school led him to drop out in the ninth grade, later getting his GED, and in 1960, he began working as a pressman at a printing plant before meeting a woman with whom he would later marry and have two sons. By 1971, the family man was working at the Standard Graveur in Louisville, Kentucky, and earning himself a reputation as one of the most reliable workers. But by 1978, their determined, hardworking, and loyal employee found himself face-to-face with an impending divorce, a bitter battle for the custody and support of his two sons, and self-admittance into a hospital for psychiatric treatment. The downward spiral only seemed to continue when Joseph's second marriage in 1983 lasted only a year, and before long, the constant hits became enough to send him straight into a reclusive state. Cut off from the very little support system he had, Joseph's depression became overwhelming. But the straw that broke the camel's back came when the Standard Graveur was sold in 1986, and the new management moved Joseph Westbecker to a news station as a mechanical folder. The job became a bit too much for him, and after complaining about the stress and pressure of his new post, asked if he could be placed back with his old job. The request was denied, and Joseph became hostile. He was convinced the new management was up to something, targeting him in the process. Began complaining about policy changes at the company and swore his exposure to toluene was causing him memory loss dizziness, and blackout spells. Realizing his complaints were going nowhere, Joseph finally left the Standard Reviewer and was placed on a long-term disability leave in February of 1989, with them promising to reemploy him when he recovered, and Joseph promising to wipe out the place and get even with the company. Over the years, a number of professionals who treated Joseph during his short hospital stints recorded their opinion that he was a danger not only to himself, but to others. Being prescribed Prozac after 12 to 15 suicide attempts and answering yes to questions like, have you ever felt like harming someone else? And my foreman to the question of who. He made threats over the years vowing to, quote, kill a bunch of people or bomb the newspaper company. But no one seemed to take Joseph Westbecker seriously. And even if they did, there really wasn't anything more that they could do beyond prescribing him medication and sending him on his way. On September 14th, 1989, shortly after receiving a letter canceling his disability income, Joseph's manic depression took hold of him, and he was ready to prove all of the professionals' hypothesis correct. At 8:30 a.m., Joseph walked into the Standard Reviewer plant carrying an AK-47S, a 9mm pistol, a bag containing two Mac 11s, a snub-nosed .38 revolver, a bayonet, and several hundred rounds of ammunition. He went straight to the elevator and climbed to the third floor, where, as soon as the doors opened, he fired at receptionist Sharon Needy and Angela Bowman. Sharon was killed instantly, and Angela was left paralyzed. He began frantically searching for the president of the company, Michael Shea, and the other supervisors he blamed for the hardships in his life. Shooting at people along the way, he killed James' husband and injured Forrest Conrad, Paula Warman, and John Stein. Satisfied he was done with this floor, he went downstairs to the press room where he killed Paul Solly and wounded electricians Stanley Hatfield and David Sadenfaden. Dropping the duffel bag in the stairwell, Joseph went down to the basement where he came face-to-face with pressman John Tingle. John greeted Joseph and asked what was going on. He replied, "Hi, John. I told them I'd be back. Get away from me," before pushing past John and continuing on his warpath. After sparing John Tingle, Joseph shot and killed Richard Barger, a man he apparently killed by accident and reportedly apologized to before moving on. Back in the press room, he shot at anyone who got in his way. This included James Whibble, Lloyd White, William Ganote, who all perished, and Kenneth Ventris, who was fatally wounded. Deciding he was done after 40 rounds and 8 deaths, Joseph Westbecker stood in the press room, pulled out one of his many weapons, and killed himself. The whole ordeal lasted about 30 minutes and left 12 more injured. When the dust settled on the attack, one of his former coworkers said, "This guy's been talking about this for years. He's been talking about guns and Soldier of Fortune magazine. He's paranoid, and he thought everyone was after him." When all was said and done, a high-profile lawsuit against Eli Lilly and company, the manufacturers of Prozac, came in the aftermath of the horrific murders. According to the suit, Joseph started taking the medication just a month before the murders, and the families of the victims were claiming that the drug was a major contributing factor to his actions. The case went to trial, and about midway through, the defense testimony opened a door that would have allowed information about a 1985 conviction when the company failed to report the adverse reactions of another drug, Oraflex, to the Food and Drug Administration to be presented to the court. This threat forced the company to negotiate an agreement, one concealed from the trial judge, and the trial continued without information about Oraflex. The jury decided in the company's favor, and the plaintiffs failed to appeal. Sensing something was off, Judge Porter did some digging and uncovered the secret agreement. With unanimous authorization from the Kentucky Supreme Court, the judge amended his record and resolved by settlement rather than the jury's verdict. Thank you for joining me in my morning cup of murder. Please join me again tomorrow to hear what terrible thing happened on September 15th. Don't forget to rate and subscribe and let me know how you like it. If you want to help support the podcast, there's always Patreon or just sharing it with your true crime obsessed friends. And remember, stay safe.